Good morning. I would like to convene this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners for Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. This is our last meeting of 2016. Traditionally, we skip the meeting the week between Christmas and New Year's, and we're going to be doing that again this year, so we will see you in 2017 after today. All three commissioners are present. That constitutes a quorum. First up is the adoption of the consent calendar, and these are mostly routine items or items that have been discussed at previous meetings. Are there any items that staff or commissioners either wish to highlight or remove from the consent calendar?
Motion to adopt the consent calendar.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for adoption of the consent calendar. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's approved. All righty, now we are going to hold a public hearing on proposed text amendments to Ordinance Number 484, which established temporary regulations for recreational marijuana facilities, case file number 02-TA-16. The Board of Commissioners initiated this legislative process by referring to the Planning Commission review of temporary regulations of recreational marijuana. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on November 14, 2016, took testimony on the proposed regulations, reviewed the issue, and recommended adoption of amendments presented today. This is a public hearing on the Planning Commission's recommendations. As this is a public hearing, I'll start by opening the hearing and describe the procedure we will be following. So I will formally declare the hearing open, and first up, we'll request a staff report by Senior Planner Joshua Shackley. Then we'll have comments and testimony from the audience. Close the hearing, and then the board will have an opportunity for questions, deliberations, motions, and decision. If you're going to comment or testify today, we ask that you come forward to the table where Mr. Card of the News Times is seated and find the the clipboard to sign with your name and address for the record. And if you do have any written materials to submit, please give them to our recorder, Tanya Graham. With that, I will now ask Mr. Shackley to give the staff report.
Thank you, Commissioners and Chairman Hall. I'm joined on the stand here by our Director, Anna Husing, here mostly for color commentary as necessary.
Obfuscation.
Thank you for the opportunity to present the staff report for case file 02-TA-16. The Board of Commissioners is asked to consider three amendments to Lincoln County Ordinance number 484, which put in place temporary regulations for recreational marijuana facilities in unincorporated Lincoln County. Of the three amendments, the first amendment may require a broader policy discussion, and what testimony you may hear today would probably be in regards to that. The other two should be fairly straightforward fixes to some unintended consequences stemming from provisions of the original ordinance. So, Lincoln County Code requires that the Board of Commissioners find that the testimony materials entered into the record provide substantial evidence that the requested legislative amendments to Ordinance 484, as prescribed under Lincoln County Code Section 1.1230, that there is a public need for the requested amendments and that the public need will be met by the changes. The amendments are consistent with Lincoln County Comprehensive Plan goals and policies, and that the amendments are consistent with all other provisions of Chapter 1 of Lincoln County Code and are in conformance with statewide planning goals and other applicable statutes and regulations. So again, the purpose of the amendments are to demonstrate a public need, first of all. In doing so, we're looking to create some consistency between our recreational marijuana ordinance, number 484, and our medical marijuana ordinance, ordinance 479. And again, also to correct a number of unintended consequences from provisions of the original ordinance. As mentioned, these amendments were initiated by the board in early October. Public hearing was held by the Planning Commission on Monday, November 14th, 2016, and we came away with several recommendations, which I'll describe in detail here. Each of the recommendations were voted on separately by the Planning Commission, and each passed unanimously, 6-0. So just a quick background on Ordinance 484. It was adopted almost exactly a year ago, December 30th, 2015. Again, it placed temporary regulations on recreational marijuana facilities in Lincoln County. Those include retail, wholesale, production, and processing facilities. And where you can do those activities depends on the zone in which you're located in the county. The reason for the temporary nature of the regulations are that they were intended to be placeholders while a lot of the details were worked out at the state level. And as you're well aware, those details are still being worked out. This next legislative session is likely to introduce even more changes to both medical and recreational marijuana programs at the state level. So before us today are more targeted amendments, while those larger discussions are pending state regulation. So the first amendment before you tonight is a consideration of the 20-acre minimum lot size that was proposed originally under Ordinance 484. And this required that a property have 20 or more acres in order to grow recreational marijuana, produce recreational marijuana outdoors. So at the request of the board, I prepared some numbers to illustrate how many properties are at play under these regulations, and I provided a breakdown of those numbers to you this morning. So just keep in mind in reviewing these numbers that a majority of these properties are split zoned, so they'll be and keep in mind we're only looking at agriculturally zoned properties, not timber conservation properties. So the breakdown here is for agriculturally zoned properties, and again, there's a majority are split zoned, so they'll have AC, agricultural zone properties, in combination with something else. So typically that's going to be timber conservation, or TC zone. But the way we would apply this provision is that you'd have to have the required 20 acres of land zoned agricultural within any particular property in order to be eligible. So if you had 10 acres of ag zoned property, that wouldn't, and 20 acres of some other zone, you would not be eligible to grow on the ag portion. So something to keep in mind. And I've eliminated, based on a couple criteria, I've eliminated some of the properties here. Public lands, those held in trust with the Wetlands Conservancy, and parcels that are too small to merit consideration for this type of use. So if you were to reduce the minimum acreage from 20 down to 15, an additional 83 properties would come into play. If you were to reduce it to 10 acre minimum, an additional 128 properties would come into play. And you can see the way that breaks down in the provided material. So this was brought to our attention. We've been approached several times by members of the public with concern that this unintentionally limits their ability to exercise this opportunity on their property based solely on the amount of acreage. And the argument's been made, and staff concurs that other provisions in the ordinance are better at providing buffers to surrounding land uses. So, for instance, a 500 foot buffer between the grow, the production facility, and a residence on a neighboring property is required, regardless of how big or small the subject property is. And I think I could draw a little diagram to better explain that, how that would work here. So, say this is a 10-acre parcel zoned for ag. There's going to be a 500-foot required separation between where you grow the marijuana and a residence not on the subject property. So, just for instance, this property could be 200 acres, and the production facility could still be located within 500 feet. So the feeling is that the 500 feet is a better mechanism to create that separation rather than lot size. Lot size in this scenario does not really affect where you can locate in relation to neighboring use. Despite my diagram and the arguments before the Planning Commission, they voted to maintain the 20-acre minimum lot size for purposes of maintaining a buffer between marijuana production and any use on a neighboring property. So the recommendation is to maintain that 20-acre minimum. Did you have anything?
Well, just that the Planning Commission also articulated that they felt like there was a sufficient opportunity within the county to grow outdoors with the existing 20-acre threshold, and that if people were that interested in growing marijuana, they could find a 20-acre parcel and carry out the activity there. I think the Planning Commission also felt like they felt it was premature to visit this issue, given that there was, again, this entire issue is a moving target. So their preference was to stay at the 20 acre. I think those were the other kind of major points that they were making in the course of their deliberation.
Right. And again, I would reiterate, I illustrated a separation between a dwelling and a production, but the same would hold for say a setback from a public road. So that's going to, regardless of the acreage of the subject parcel, you could locate within 20 or 30 feet of a public road. So the acreage, the minimum acreage requirement, is not going to affect visibility to a public area, a public road. So that's amendment number one. And that was the recommendation, again, was from the Planning Commission, was to maintain that 20-acre minimum lot size. The amendment number two, a provision of Ordinance 484 requires that a property on which a recreational marijuana retail outlet or wholesale facility the property itself can be located no closer than 250 feet from a property zoned for residential use. So, and that's measured from property boundary to property boundary. And
so now you're on the two items that were sort of we deem housekeeping, because they were, everybody kind of agreed they were, we never met for that to knock out all these problems.
Sure. And I can illustrate using this exhibit over here. So a majority of the properties zoned general and retail commercial in the county are located in Glen Eden and Lincoln Beach. And those are popped out here. And the green area here is our R1 residential zone. So a majority of these properties, and again, this is the bulk of the commercially zoned properties in the county, share a property boundary with a residentially zoned property. So there's not the 250 feet separation. And even those that don't share a property boundary are easily within 250 feet of a residentially. So the unintended consequence there is that we've basically eliminated all these, the bulk of our commercially zoned properties in the county from eligibility for retail, outlet, and wholesale facilities. So the Planning Commission recommended that 250-foot separation be removed from Ordinance 484, and that's consistent with our medical marijuana ordinance, Ordinance 479. Amendment number three, the final amendment, is that a 250-foot separation from a production site is required to any residence not on the subject property.
So we're talking indoor now, too, though, right?
This is strictly indoor. So indoor recreational marijuana production site cannot be located any closer than 250 feet from a residence on a neighboring property, irrespective of the zoning of this subject property. So this is a departure from what was set out in our medical marijuana ordinance, and which differentiates that distance based on the zoning. And so adopting these amendments as recommended by the Planning Commission would bring the two ordinances into alignment. So the Planning Commission recommended that the Board of Commissioners amend Ordinance 484 so that recreational marijuana production sites on properties zoned rural residential 5, RR5, and rural residential RR10 should be required to locate at a minimum distance of 250 feet from a dwelling not on a subject property. So that would be no change in those two zones. In the agricultural conservation, AC, and timber conservation, TC zones, an indoor production facility should be required to locate at least 250 feet from a neighboring dwelling. So that, again, an indoor production as opposed to outdoor could locate within 250 feet of a neighboring dwelling. Outdoor production in AC and TC zones would require 500-foot separation between production facilities and a neighboring dwelling. And then in the IP zone, where it's a conditional use, there's no set separation. Again, that's due to the discretion provided to us through the conditional use permitting process. We can, if there are conflicting uses on adjacent properties, we can identify those and require a separation. So, again, those are the recommendations of the Planning Commission. And, again, we're looking to you to make a finding that there is a public need for these changes and that the public need is met. And, again, the public need here is that consistency between the ordinances would provide clarity to the public, and that we've unintentionally limited the number of properties in the county that are eligible for certain facility types under the current ordinance. So we need a finding that there's a public need and that need will be met, that the amendments are consistent with Lincoln County Comprehensive Planning goals and policies and all other provisions of Chapter 1 of Lincoln County Code, and in conformance with statewide planning goals and all other applicable statutes and regulations. Do you have any questions on...
Gentlemen, questions at this time for Mr. Shackley?
I guess I'd like clarification. The recommendations, you said there's no change as far as the 250-foot state set, excuse me, setback for recreational marijuana production. And there's also the 250-foot setback for agricultural AC and timber conservation TC zones for indoor recreational production. What was it? What did it change from?
In those instances, it's the same as before.
Okay.
So
the 250 feet for both A and B are really no change.
Correct.
And then C is a change out. Recommendation C, the 500-foot.
It's actually the original ordinance was 250 feet.
So you're increasing to outdoor, it to 500.
Increasing it,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Anything else? Then let's open it up to the public. Mr. Miller, can we check the
Clerk, if I might, as you're doing that, just note for the record that we did receive some written testimony from an email from, actually, I think she's signing up to do this right now, from the Morfords, and that will be entered into the record. So just so that Pat and Astrid hear that, that's going to be entered into the record, the written materials, too. All right?
Good.
Okay. I didn't receive any other. I don't know if you received any other written materials.
I did not.
All right. Ryan Bledsoe's first time.
Okay, Ryan, if you'd like to come forward on this, please.
So just state my name.
Yes, please.
My name is Ryan Bledsoe, and I'm in the medical and recreational marijuana business here in Lincoln County. And I'd like to say that everything that we've done in this new industry is as diverse and as changing as it is every day. We've really done our due diligence, at least at our grow operations and our retail stores, to find the right areas appropriate to do this type of business. And I feel like working with you gentlemen and our planning commission and all the rules and regulations set by the state has been quite an educational process. So I can tell you this one thing, that we really have done it the right way. We really tried to find the right places to do this. And it was interesting to us to find a location, make a sizable investment in the location, and then find out when the new recreational rules coming into play, there was a change on our planning commission level of where we could and couldn't do because of a setback. So what that did is it took our business from working in the medical field of growing marijuana to temporary retail recreational rules of the transitional period going into the new emerging market of fully licensed recreational growing and retail. And this one change took us out of that game when nothing has changed everywhere else. I mean, we've seen an increase in what type of security camera we put up, or what type of insurance we need to hold, or a different packaging procedure, or all the new testing rules and regulations to bring a safe product. In our commercial grow, I'll tell you, working with the Department of Ag, obtaining two different Department of Agricultural licenses, being overseen by the Department of Ag of what we use and how we use it with business management plans, water management plans, power plans, a professional counseling that happens internally in our business. I feel like be able to obtain the proper permits and having to use licensed contractors has not only improved the lands that we are around, it's generated jobs, and really improved the whole atmosphere of growing and recreational retail and sailing. So, the one little 250 residential setback change in our IP zone definitely did hamper us in emerging with this new retail market, which we'd always had plans when we entered the business to eventually evolve into that business. And so the one place that we could actually do that was in an IP zone. There wasn't very many IP zones that we could get into, and now that we're kind of locked out of that one. So your consideration on that amendment would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, thank you
for your time. Any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Bledsoe?
Okay. Good to see you, Ryan.
All right, thanks, guys.
Who's up next?
Mayor Haney Schiffler.
Okay.
Is it okay if I talk from here?
We need to capture for the record, so if I'm sorry about that, but you know, if there is any further, you know. Thanks, and if you'd give us your name and...
My name is Marianne Shipley, and the reason that I'm here today is that I'm looking at a property that's 5 acres, and everything around it is ag land. The 5 acres is ag, and I was hoping to supplement my Social Security in something that I could actually do, gardening. And so that's basically the point that I'd like to make. There's all the other things is not a, are not a problem because I'm way, way out the country. So that's pretty much what I would like to see, Jay.
Okay.
So that I could go ahead and purchase the property.
Just curiosity, where's the parcel located?
It's out past Logsdon.
Okay. And so you say it's totally surrounded by agriculturally zoned property, other...
Well, it's timber, but a lot of agriculture, too. Okay. There's,
so it's
there's
all
There's 300 acres
lands.
Total. Okay. A lot is timber, but there's, I think, 38 acres that are agriculture, but I would only own 5 of them.
Okay. Any questions from the board? No, thank you for your input. Appreciate it. Who else do we have, Casey?
Looks like, if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Astrea?
Astrea.
Astrea?
Yeah. Astrea, I don't know if you heard me when we were doing this. We've entered your written materials into the record.
Oh, good.
So that's
yes.
in the record.
Good. I'm Astrea Morford, and I'm from the Logsdon area, and I want to grow outdoor cannabis. Monday I sent you guys some thoughts that I had on it. Did you guys have any questions about that?
No.
You've
done a lot of research.
Yes. I have. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I edited it down so that you guys didn't get inundated with pages and pages of information. And I think that in Lincoln County, the people, for the most part, who are looking to grow outdoors are people who already own their property. Some people are looking to buy property. I know Marianne lives on her piece already. And so expecting people to buy another piece of property that fits the requirements, I think it's unnecessary. And banks don't loan money. They're not going to loan money for cannabis businesses. That's the reality of it is. So for us personally, we have 12 acres. We're a farm. And we're very interested in growing outdoors because environmentally, it's much better than growing indoors. You know, and as the cannabis industry expands across the United States, because it seems like more and more states are okaying it, there's going to be more suck on the energy system, and we need to stop that. It's a plant. It grows outdoors. And you can grow it in greenhouses or just outside here. So I'm in favor of completely removing the acreage requirement, and I think that that would give our citizens, the opportunity to make money off of it, because there is a great deal of money to be made off of it. And in our county, we have 7 grow applications in right now and 19 dispensary applications. So I think that there is a great deal of room for more growers. And in the state, as of yesterday, there was 973 growers and 491 dispensary applications in. That's 1.98 growers per dispensary. So I think that those dispensaries will be looking for more cannabis, and I think it should come from our county.
So. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else signed up?
No one else on the list. Anyone else?
Okay, we'll offer one last opportunity for people to come forward with comments or questions on this topic. Hearing none, we will close the public hearing and move toward questions, deliberations, motion, and decision. Commissioner Thompson.
Could I have one of the people from the Planning Commission back up here? I've got a couple questions. The first one was, how much public comment was at the Planning Commission meeting?
There was none. No testimony.
Can I say something, please? I'm Pat Morford. I'm also out with Astria. There is no notification at all, and Astria's made the decision that every Monday she will be checking online for any kind of information that's been coming forward. But
would you come up and speak into this microphone? This is important information you have to put on the record.
I'm Pat Morford, and I'm out in Logsdon, and we've been here before. There is no notification, and we did strongly ask to be included in this for input, and I think it's very important to note that. We asked to be included, and we've never received just even a quick email, anything at all. So I think it's unfair to say that there was absolutely no input because there was no way for anybody to know that the input was needed at the time. And the last time we were here for the board of directors meetings, we thought it was a done deal. We've put thousands of dollars towards the infrastructure for our farm now to grow this. And so if we can't grow it, you know, right now we're at like $5,000 worth of fencing alone. And there's a lot more to go. And $3,000 worth of surveillance equipment. So it's important that the reality of all of this be there. And it's untenable that we would be just shut down simply because someone can't come to the grips of a 20-acre removal. 500 feet is more than adequate, absolutely. And that's enough, I would think, because if you have 500 feet between any of your existing neighbors' residences, you've got quite a bit of property. The cannabis grows are a half-acre or one-acre maximum coverage. So it's a very small crop, and there's no reason to have 20 acres at all. Anyway, thank you very much. It's a very important issue for us and a lot of other people. And one of the reasons that people don't show up is because they don't know about it, one. But the other thing is, too, is that people are still suffering under the idea that it's a shadow industry. It's been in the shadows for so long that people still suffer from that. Personally, I think it needs to be out in the open because there are a lot of really professional people that use cannabis and have forever.
So, Patty, this was a question on one subject.
I'm sorry.
You went off it. Please, next time, sign up. I mean, you obviously have a lot to say. Sign up. Mm-hmm. That's what public process is for. This was, we're at the point where we're trying to ask the question, and you answered the question.
Yeah,
so thank
you
very much.
I understand. I'm sorry.
And just from a procedural standpoint, I mean, we consider when the agenda is published on the county website, that's the public notice of the meeting, correct?
There's also a notice published
in the newspaper, in the legal sections.
So because a legislative amendment such as this doesn't, there's no particular property where notice requirement would kick in. So
there's no individual.
There's no mailing. There's no mailing.
As would and be required if you were.
We have heard from the Morfords and others that they would have been there had they known. And if there was a request that they be included and we didn't provide that, then we apologize. But
well, we need to just put it out that, you know, people need to be proactive and check the website then.
They really do, because oftentimes, you know, we'll find sometimes we'll even send out a special email if we think there's an issue of broad public interest, and sometimes it gets covered in the local media and sometimes it doesn't.
So. I understand what you're. It's frustrating. You're in a new industry, and you're not used to exactly where to go to get the information. It's frustrating, and since this is new industry, I think you.
Oh, it changes too every day.
And there's so much information out there coming from different directions. It's difficult. Any new industry goes through this kind of a problem, and we suffer from it in the fishing industry too. You've just completely missed out on a meeting, but it's important to note that the Planning Commission didn't have access to outside information. So that was my first question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, all of you.
Yeah.
Okay, continued deliberation by the Board of Commissioners.
I get shot. Would you stay up here? I got more questions. At the time that we adopted the 20, can you review a little bit what the situation is, where the 20 acres came from? Because this seems to be the contentious, most contentious issue.
Sure. If you'll remember, the ordinance was pulled together rather hastily. We had to have something in place before applications were going into OLCC early January of this year. I believe the 20-acre minimum was pulled from Deschutes County ordinance. And initially, if you'll remember, we weren't considering allowing outdoor production through the course of the hearings before the Planning Commission in this body. That changed. So I think that provision came to be because we were looking for inspiration, for lack of a better word, from other ordinances and how other counties were handling it.
So could you, are you familiar with the agriculture industry in Deschutes County? At all?
Limited.
So in your limited experience, would you describe how many acres, how many lot sizes might be in Deschutes County?
Probably a lot more than the 1,700 acres here, or 1,700 properties.
So. And so we were looking for positions, but wouldn't it be, if we did most kinds of county regulations, wouldn't we look for similar counties?
Yes.
To implement lot size on, rather than not just this, but in most cases, if we look at cost that you pay for county commissioners, for instance.
It's a great point.
Trying to find comparables, sure, to compare to.
90% of Lincoln County, as you're well aware, is zoned for timber production. I believe 4 or 5% is zoned for agriculture, maybe less. So the number of properties that are zoned agricultural are already very limited. And then adding this 20-acre minimum lot size further restricted the number of properties eligible to grow outdoors.
So I'd like to ask the next question of Wayne Belmont. Wayne, and I don't, you might be able to answer this, but as an attorney and with the laws that were passed related to cannabis growing, the intention of the public, is there anything you can read in that law that might give us some understanding of what the intention of the law was meant to be in relationship with comparable sizes or anything like that?
Well, actually, what the legislature did was grant the authority to cities and counties to do what they call TPM, time, place, manner restrictions, which is what this kind of falls under. And that was really it. It was a broad discretionary grant of authority to do that. And then all the jurisdictions are scrambling to figure out how do you actually apply that. And again, I think as Mr. Shackley said, you know, we did this originally because we were under a time constraint. And in fact, if you notice, even on these, we talk about these as temporary restrictions. This is a very, very fluid environment here, and we've heard that from everybody. You know, in terms of the state itself has not completed its work completely, you know, on how they're going to regulate things. So we're kind of operating in a little bit of a vacuum here to do this. And so there is no right or wrong answer. It's a policy decision that the board needs to make in here. And I think, you know, taking the testimony and evidence you've seen, and then you know, the indication was we basically that 20 acres came from one other jurisdiction in which we saw that as a way. And you started this with saying that was a broader one and you could narrow it or go. It's harder to go up than it is to go down. Let's put it that way.
Okay. I'm going to relax my questions. Okay. I'll let you guys go from there, but you can see.
Okay, I've got a follow-up related to one of your questions for either of our planners. So, like, for instance, Tillamook County, our neighbor to the north, I believe they have chosen not to do any time, place, or manner, but just default to the regulations that the state of Oregon has in place. So for Tillamook County, for example, on ag land? Is there any minimum lot size for a outdoor grow? Under none whatsoever.
That's correct? My understanding.
Is your understanding of the state regulation? Okay. Commissioner Hunt, do you have any questions or comments?
The only thing I want to clarify is, based on the information you've given us, there are 340 properties in the county that would exceed the, well, equal or exceed the 20-acre minimum. And how many applications have we had for outdoor grows?
I believe just one thus far, but... the Morfords are among a handful of people that have approached us that aren't currently eligible because of that minimum.
But there are 340 properties that would be eligible if those owners so choose.
Correct.
chose to do so.
Okay. Could I build off that question? Of that 340 properties, in my experience in Lincoln County, most of them are cattle-type situations or the small farm-type situations for animals rather than a planting operation. Yeah. So it would be difficult to convert a lot of those style of properties over to a grow situation. It would be expensive. Am I close to right in that assumption, or can you? You're not an expert in agriculture. This would probably be better asked to an extension agent.
Yeah, I think you'd find a wide range of among those 240 some, you'd find a wide range of properties in different conditions for growing. So some would be more appropriately used for grazing. I think so. It's hard for me to say without really doing more research. Of the numbers that we provided, which of those would be suited for this activity? But there are, I know just in my experience looking at zoning maps, you've got a range of properties. Some are stretched out along a river where, you know, they're just several hundred feet wide, where it wouldn't make sense to do something like that, even though maybe they meet the 20-acre minimum lot size. So I think there's just so many different variables that would play in that it's hard to say of the number provided who could actually do it, whose properties are suited.
I'm going to ask this question. I'm sure I'll make this brief answer now.
Killing it. You're killing it.
I'll try.
Are you familiar with our economic studies for Lincoln County?
Yes.
Okay. And in those studies...
How am I doing on the brief?
That's the quickest I've ever seen. Well,
so far, so good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes
was a lot shorter.
So, in those studies, it showed something like only 2% or 0.2% of the economic value in Lincoln County is derived from agriculture. Is that close to right?
Well, recorded farm gate. You know, there's been a lot of growing of marijuana in this county for a long time, so I suspect...
Well, recorded farm gate. Right. The official numbers are that it's that small.
We've been 36th out of 36 counties, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, hasn't it been growing steadily? I mean, still a tiny number, but compared to the previous study 10 years earlier, there was growth.
Yeah, because of the more niche agricultural activities. I think there could be an agricultural renaissance, frankly, in parts of Lincoln County because of the new demands for artisanal.
Okay, let me ask the questions, sir. So if that's the case and it's that small, it seems like to me, a lot of these farms struggle here, especially the smaller farms. We don't have a high-value commodity crop that can make our agriculture industry grow. Would it make you think, and this is an assumption I'm asking you, that by bringing marijuana into their array of products, that it would be possible then to make a lot of these farms profitable and actually grow?
Well, we've in our many dialogues with people, and I think it's really good that this time around we have the benefit of some testimony.
Answer the question.
we have had people from that are interested in doing this that are already involved in existing agricultural see this as an important additional revenue stream to supplement the existing agricultural activities they're undertaking at their property.
Now, I'm going to ask the question this way. The Planning Commission job is to do land use, but doesn't get into the political realm. And our job is to bring the public realm more into the picture. Am I correct in my assumption of the Planning Commission?
Well, I think they're tasked to look at the same suite of issues that you are, but we have the way that our system is arranged is that on these legislative plan amendments that they give you a recommendation, and so the public is really purposely structurally given two bites at the apple here. You are the last word, and of course you're invested with the authority to make these code recommendations.
I'm going to make an obvious assumption from being a commissioner over these years. It's my job to get out and be with the public. A planning commission is a body that's more looking at the laws and to try to understand the growth of the county and to try to make the county prosperous. So I'm not saying the planning commission isn't wrong from their point of view, but from my point of view, it's a different situation for me as a commissioner to... because I have more public contact and I have more, I think in my job, more of a public need to grow and make the county prosperous. And so I'm trying to defend the Planning Commission for where they're at. But with all the information that's given to me and from my experience, I'm having trouble trying to, not stop growth, but to hold growth back in a potential industry that can make an agricultural business more prosperous. So I'm struggling there with this.
Well, could I make some observations and throw out a question for our discussion? I'm sensing from you, at least, Commissioner Thompson, a willingness to consider not following the Planning Commission's recommendation to maintain the 20-acre minimum. And that is the direction I'm headed to, and I don't go there lightly. I cannot remember, this is the last meeting of my 12th year as a commissioner, and I can't remember in that time ever voting not to follow a Planning Commission recommendation. I mean, I think we have a lot of respect for the work they do, really, that all of our advisory boards, commissions, and committees do. But I think we're starting to see evolving here today some compelling reasons to at least consider doing that. And, as we discussed when we approved outdoor grows in the ag zone in the first place, that I think people, when they choose to live in an agricultural zone, they know that some noise, odors, activities that don't go with standard residential zones are part of the deal. I think the economic benefit is the potential economic benefit anyway is pretty clear. And if you look at what the people have done at the ballot box, the people of Lincoln County have made it pretty clear that they want this industry. By contrast, Deschutes County, I can't recall the statistics off the top of my head, but I believe, that's a county that has voted against this industry time and time again, and in fact is not allowing dispensaries or recreational sales outlets. Ideally also we've talked about it being a moving target, and at one point we said we weren't going to do further adjustments until the target stopped moving, but I think the reality is the target is going to keep moving for a long while. I've started to look over the bills that have been introduced in the legislature for next year, and among the whole sheaf of marijuana legislation is one that we've heard rumored for a long time, is to take most of the medical operation away from Oregon Health Authority, move it over into the Liquor Control Commission, and in fact even rename it the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission. So I think the fact that it's a moving target alone does not compel me to wait. So I guess a question I want to throw out for further thought or discussion is, if this is the direction we're headed, you know, do we want to go down to a 10-acre minimum, a 5-acre minimum, or do away with a minimum acreage requirement entirely and just count on what, again, the planning staff's recommendation is that the setback requirements would be the most effective way to minimize neighboring negative impacts on neighboring properties. Commissioner Thompson.
So there is a negative to this. First of all, growers, the county received no money through this from the marijuana. It's amazing to me this system is developed like this, where really there's no funds follow this industry into the county level. It's all falling into the state level. I'm looking at Joshua, and you guys, am I right in my assumption? There's very little money. It's going to the cities and the state, most of the finances.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us are expert on the revenue implications of.
Well, I would just weigh in very quickly. There's various facets that are taxed, but the only one that we would tax is the recreational sales.
That is the
point at which if you you've adopted an ordinance,
2% of whatever.
Other elements of that are not taxed.
Basically, when we have more farms out there, that means our law enforcement, our sheriffs, because it's in the county, is going to have to respond. But we see very little funds to do anything. That's one of the negative things of this. It's not designed very well, at least for the counties, in my opinion. At this point, this is all up for change. And I caution, if anything changes here, that if you're going to invest a bunch of money, it's still a pig in a poke. The state can come through and change all the game, and then you're out money. Just to make sure that you understand the situation.
Or the feds.
Yeah, or the feds can change this
thing. I think that's the biggest risk.
Right, and that's... Yeah. So, in my opinion, because I believe that we did it a little too hastily, we didn't have a comparables with other counties our size, I'm willing to go halfway down, and that's to the 10 acres. I don't think we pick up that much more property. If you start going down to zero, man, you pick up 1,100 more properties with no money to maintain it. And so...
Commissioner, I suspect that given the outdoor grows, and that people in the audience would know a lot more than me, that probably this is going to be an East County activity anyway, because the weather circumstances, you get to Logsdon, as you know, Harlan, these other places, that starts to look a lot more like the temperatures and the humidity levels that might be conducive to that act. So that's sort of a climatic external factor that could also be a real winnowing down of how many people choose to actually do this and where.
Yeah. So for me, I'm a big advocate for the agriculture industry in the state of Oregon. I always have been. I want to see it as strong as possible, because a lot of other industries are going to come and go, but people are going to be eating food. And in this case, since cannabis is now an agricultural product and may be the product that actually stimulates that farm to be profitable and go into other areas of food production that without it they can't, I'm going to I'm willing to go down to 10 acres. It's kind of like splitting the baby. I just don't think we can handle law enforcement beyond that. That's a large enough thing that I think they can afford to put all the protections and stuff in themselves, because they're out there in the rural part of the county and they need to be protected. If you go down to little bitty ones, it's going to be in their backyards, and I just don't think we can do it.
Well, I obviously am at the other end of the spectrum. I was opposed to outdoor growing. I continue to be opposed to outdoor growing. You talk about input from citizens. The biggest single complaint I've heard is the odor from grows. And that really, to me, is one of the crucial questions. And no offense to the Morfords, You know, I certainly respect your interests and the fact that a smaller acreage would be beneficial to you. At the same time, we've only had a small number of applicants, and I have to consider, you know, what is the best interest of the most citizens of the county. And to me, the offensiveness of the odor that I've heard from several citizens is a bigger concern. And I also wrestle with the fact that, you're an agricultural owner, and your neighbors can expect to have noise and sound. At the same time, until the legalization of marijuana, nobody expected that there would be marijuana and the odor from the growth of marijuana coming from an adjacent agricultural product. So we're not necessarily undoing something. We're in effect adding to the list of issues that neighbors could deal with. And I guess the bigger issue in my mind is cost versus benefits. We've discussed at this Board of Commission before the fact that there's going to be a tremendous burden on our public services as far as licensing, monitoring, responding to crime, enforcement issues. And there's simply not going to be the money generated for the county to be able to add people to do that, to do those needs that I think serve the greater good of the county. So I support the recommendations of the commission. I think there's been some judicial changes, but I'm very concerned about the long-range unintended consequences of shrinking the size of outdoor grows, and how many greater issues will this create as we go down the road. Again, these are temporary. We can continue to take input, and maybe in the future there will be additional revenues to support the type of staffing and services that would address, in my opinion, smaller grow size.
So I'm going to respond to Doug, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The 500-foot buffer zone was put in to prevent exactly what you're talking about. I'm not saying I know it for sure that's right, but that's the reason I'm looking at it here, guys. The 500-foot was placed in is to keep that odor so that it doesn't affect the property. Believe me, I experienced it right here in town, but it was a lot closer than 500 feet. At 500 feet, I'm not sure. I think that's something that we'll find over time if it's a problem. But there's also a thing called the right to farm. And I'm a big advocate for the right to farm. A lot of times in a farm community, you may have a manure pile. I mean, we have it with milk production. We have all these things that are offensive odors to people, but yet the farming has to go on. So for me, the Right to Farm Act, we did the right thing by implementing a distance from that, and that should have addressed that. Beyond that, if you don't like it, stay in the city. Okay.
Yeah, but I'll go on too. I think, and again, to the people that are considering farming, there was an article about outdoor grows in Jackson County. In Jackson and Josephine County, at least as I understand it, are considered to be some of the best marijuana growing country property in the world, certainly in the United States. And there was a substantial amount of outdoor grow that had to be burned because of mold. So, you know, there are issues with outdoor growing. I think, again, Lincoln County, with our climate, probably will have some greater issues. But I think it's important, too, to acknowledge the Cole Memorandum. The Cole Memorandum is literally a memorandum between the federal government, the Attorney General's office, and it states that the federal government reserves prosecutorial right or overview and will not prosecute in states where the states have legalized marijuana, subject to certain criteria. One of those criteria is that the state establishes a mechanism to control the growth, the growing of marijuana, and that marijuana does not get exported outside of the state. So we've already got a state that's growing more marijuana than we can consume within our borders. And the Cole Memorandum says if this is exported outside of the state, you're in violation of the memorandum. And if the federal government decided, and I think there's certainly a different attitude in Washington, D.C. than there has been in the past, they may revoke that or place higher restraints or conditions on the states that have legalized it. So I just state that for the record.
Okay, Mr. Belmont, I think I'm hearing a 2-to-1 consensus evolving. How would you suggest just operationally we memorialize a decision to move, reduce the 20-acre minimum to 10 acres?
I think we need a motion to that effect in a second, and then a consensus. If you adopt that, then we can develop the ordinance and come back to you with the ordinance that implements that.
And may I piggyback on that? So then the other two items that are far less controversial, the housekeeping ones,
could
we in separate motions?
Mold that all, or should those be a separate motion? Yeah, I think they should be probably the two housekeeping items, or two separate motions.
Well, actually, you can do a single motion, I think, because there seems to be a consensus on the other two, if I'm reading this right. And then it's really just the 20 acres being reduced to 10 acres. If that could be a single motion. If that's the consensus of the board, and that's what's adopted by the majority of the board, we'll amend the code.
The preference? One motion or two?
Two.
Okay. Yeah, I think we'd like to do the acreage separately.
That's fine.
So, Commissioner Thompson, would you like to make a motion?
I make a motion to move the acreage limit from 20 to 10 acres.
I'll second that motion. Any further deliberation? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. It's so ordered. And now, second motion on the two housekeeping items, if we could take those together. How would that be phrased, essentially?
Just a motion to follow Planning Commission recommendations number 2 and 3, which is to remove the provisions in Ordinance 484, about the 250-foot distance from residentially zoned property, and then the number 3 is to add the new standards in that are in conformance with the medical marijuana.
They can't do that. I'll just say whatever he said.
So how about a motion to
follow Planning Commission recommendations 2 and 3.
2 and 3. I can do that.
Yeah. Motion
2 and 3.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, motion and a second to adopt Planning Commission recommendations 2 and 3. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Now, commissioners, can I just this actually helps a little bit because it's going to be a little confusing here because of our schedule here. What I will do is prepare an ordinance with your second recommendation and vote unanimously for adoption on January 4th. So there will be an ordinance that makes those changes on January 4th because we're not going to have all three of you here on January 4th.
Right.
I'll then bring back on January 11th a separate amendment that adopts the 2-to-1 vote on the acreage reduction. That way you can all vote on those things separately and we can handle them both in an appropriate and timely fashion.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Can I make one last comment?
Yeah.
I caution people again, this is a growing industry. When you put a lot of money into it, you got it. I want to make it clear that you're taking a gamble. It's a gamble in business. It may get changed immediately by some other organization.
It could be changed early next year.
Right. It could be as early as next year.
Try to work with your neighbors because that really goes a long way to making this work.
Mm-hmm.
Is just be courteous and work with them.
Okay. We can now move on to decision and action items. Order awarding Lincoln County Community and Economic Development Fund grants. Julie Kay is here for the presentation. And Caroline Bauman from the Economic Development Alliance as well. Julie from our staff. And
good morning, Commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So last week we presented the Community and Economic Development Grant. We had 20 applications for a total of $218,210 in requests. There were 8 with recommendations from the Economic Development Alliance Committee. And so you discussed it to increase another $5,000 on the port of LC for a total of $105,000.
And that's the only change from the Alliance Board's recommendations, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Any further questions, input, deliberation by the commissioners?
We discussed it last time. I appreciate the good work of the board and Carolyn and Julie.
Yes, and I was not present, but I did review the record, and I'll echo Commissioner Hunt's comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll entertain a motion at this time.
I move to approve the awarding of the Lincoln County Community and Economic Development Fund grants as presented.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's official. Thank you much.
Thank you.
All righty. Now we move on to our next order in the matter of awarding a bid for the 2016 Little Switzerland Road Slide Repair Retaining Wall Project. Mr. Kenyon.
You're on your own, Mr. Kenyon.
I wanted to bring my attorney with me.
You'll be there to answer the questions.
I'll be gentle.
Grill him.
I'll try to be brief. Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works. Basically, short story is, in January of 2012, the road leading into Little Switzerland Road District was damaged by the storm event. We started the process of repair through FEMA. It's been a long, drawn-out process. FEMA basically has funded each individual process separately. So we've now worked our way through all of design work. We've worked our way through all of the permit process, and we're to the point now finally of being able to start the construction process. Bids, bid packets were let out, and we received bids on November 30th. Prior to us receiving the final bids, there were two addendums. They were both last-second addendums, basically meaning the day before we were supposed to open bids, changes come up. The first change was actually basically a typo. In the specs, it called for 200,000 board feet of lumber to go into this project. Well, actually, the decimal point was moved a little too far to the right. It was actually 2,000. And so what that means is everybody that holds a packet has to be notified through of this addendum. Mm-hmm. So there's the change is processed, it's sent out. Mm-hmm. Then we set a new date for bid opening, and prior to the next bid opening, there was another change came up, and it had to do in the actual specs. With a FEMA project, a federally funded project, there are certain requirements. One of them is the Made in America, which means the materials you buy need to come from the U.S. Well, the way the specs were written, the sheet pile, the steel sheet pile that was called for in the specs, the thickness, that's particular thickness was not actually processed and built in the U.S. And so, and this was an engineering thing. Engineering was taken care of by a separate contractor. So we had to back up. And they rewrote the specs.
Yeah.
I've been sitting back there for a long time. They had to rewrite the specs for a thinner sheet pile that actually could be purchased within the U.S. Not a big deal. This stuff happens all the time. It's part of the process. And so we received 9 bids. And part of the process is to check all the bids for accuracy. And this is where we got into a little bit of a problem. Each addendum that was sent out basically has to be included in the packet, so that we know that each contractor that's submitting a bid has received all the necessary information. Each addendum has to be signed at the bottom. Normally, there's a signature box at the bottom of the addendum, and because of the rush to get this stuff out, the box wasn't there. On a majority of the bids, we lacked a signature or two. So basically what we're looking at is there was some T's that weren't crossed, some I's that weren't dotted. Everything else was good. All of the new information was included in every bid. So each number, the final, the total bid on each packet was good. Everything was included. We just didn't have a few T's crossed and a few I's dotted. And so from what I understand is there is a provision that allows for the board to waive these requirements on what is considered a very minor issue. And so what I'm here today to do is to ask the board to waive this provision to allow the process to continue, knowing that the actual bottom line number, the dollar amount of each bid, is actually a good, solid number.
So procedurally, a question maybe for Mr. Belmont. Mm-hmm. The request today is just to waive that provision or actually to go ahead?
No, it's actually to make the award.
You would
actually make the award. And I would note just for the record that lowest responsive bid is only 0.8, and I'm going to get my decimal right, 0.8% greater than the engineer's estimate. So it was 1.316 million was the low bid, and the estimate was 1.305. So pretty darn close. I commend Kenyon and his crew for putting together such a great
$10,000 on a $1.3 million.
It's amazing.
That is.
Yeah, so that's another indicator that they bid it the right way.
Could I ask a follow-up question to Mr. Belmont? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Mr. Kenyon and Mr. Hodge have been in consultation with legal, but from a legal standpoint, if we do waive this requirement, do you believe that we're on solid ground legally, procedurally?
Absolutely. We've provided you with some legal information related to that.
As I reviewed the memorandum, I felt that was the case. But
you may
and then I see Mr. Herbage's memorandum on the subject as well. Yes. Yep.
So you've got that in your mind.
Okay, Commissioner Thompson.
So, being a person that used to do contracts with the federal and state government for fisheries work, I lost a contract that was a 500-page on a big icy bay contract in the middle of an El Nino and fishing was bad because I missed one box I initialed. I will enjoy passing this one because I'll remember that the rest of my life.
Because again, I think what the key provision here, Mr. Herbage's memorandum, is again in Oregon administrative rules where it says a contracting agency may waive a minor informality. Then it goes on to explain what a minor informality is, and it certainly, as I read this, that this falls within that scope.
We can tell on the face of the bids that they complied with all the requirements, including the addendums.
Okay.
It didn't change the outcome. It doesn't change the intent.
Right. So are we ready for a motion?
I move for approval of awarding a bid for the 2016 Little Switzerland Roadside Repair Retaining Wall Project as submitted.
I will happily second.
Okay, motion and a second to award this bid. All in favor, please say aye.
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 One thing I would like to add just for information is that on a FEMA project like this, the federal government pays for 75% of the total cost of the project. Because this road is not part of the county-maintained system, it's actually a road district who they pay their taxes to take care of their own roads. The extra 25% is actually going to be paid for by the Oregon Emergency Management. So, and all of our time gets billed to that. So we're just the ones processing the paper, making sure that these kind of things get taken care of. But as far as the actual funding of the project, Lincoln County is not on the hook for any of this.
None of it. That's interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, not the usual procedure.
Dot your I's, cross your T's, and put a tail on your Q's.
All the good stuff.
All right, thanks, sir.
Thank you, Ben Roy. Okay, next up we move on to initiating the formation of the Greater Toledo Pool Recreation District. and adopting a permanent rate levy, Wayne Belmont, and we've also got...
Do you need
me? Yeah, I wanna, yeah, we do have some folks here who are part of this process, and I need to... I'm going to follow the theme for today, and it's dots and decimals, because I just noticed, and thanks to Mr. Kenyon, who pointed out to me that I made an error in the draft order that we've got here for you to adopt today, because I didn't put my decimal point. That when you look at a permanent rate levy, which we'll be discussing in a minute here, the way you do that legally is there's no longer a symbol, it seems like, on our computers that you can put cents. Mm-hmm. So you put it as dollars, and you put 0 point the dollar amount. And I put the decimal on the wrong side of the zero. So it's not as shown in here, 0.077 cents per thousand being proposed. It's 77 cents per $1,000. So on the very first paragraph, and I'll correct this in all the locations I need to, what's being proposed here is a permanent rate levy of 77 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. Now, jumping the gun, but I want to note that for the record.
I'm glad you took responsibility.
Yeah, that's mine. That is mine. Yet all the material submitted by the petitioners indicated 77 cents per thousand.
So, I'm sorry, where's that?
That's on page one of the proposed order.
In the matter of the initiation of the formation of the Greater Toledo Pool Recreation District.
And I saw that one, and I want to make sure it isn't in there again.
Yeah, the second whereas.
Yeah.
Line number 13. Yep, just cross out that
decimal.
Zero.
So that's today's decimal day.
It's been a decimal kind of day.
Yep. Okay.
All right, so what we have before you today is that a number of citizens in the what we'll call the Greater Toledo area, we'll talk about what that means in a minute here, have come forward and expressed an interest in forming a what's known as a recreation district under Oregon Revised Statutes Chapter 266. And the purpose of the district would be to maintain, improve, and operate the Toledo Swimming Pool and some related facilities with that. And this is an attempt, I think, by the city of Toledo and people who are concerned with that Toledo pool to come up with a mechanism to keep that in operation, keep it in existence. There's been a lot of discussion. You may have followed the discussion that the city of Toledo has had for several years about the cost of maintaining and keeping the pool open. And what they might be able to do in the future. And this is an effort to try and address that. I'm going to let Mindy talk about the particulars of that, but I'm just going to describe the process. What they're doing here is they've come forward to you with a petition, but they're not following the statutory process in which they gather official signatures and proceed in that official capacity. Instead, they're asking you as the Board of Commissioners under a different provision of ORS Chapter 198 to actually initiate the process for them. They're providing some evidence that there is community support in terms of the number of supporters and people who signed and signed on to supporters. That we'll talk about those numbers in a minute. But this process would entail you actually initiating the process, holding a series of public hearings, and if it goes forward, presenting to the voters of the proposed district the question of forming the district and establishing a permanent rate to support the operation of the pool. So that's procedurally where we are here. And this is the first step in what would be, again, a series of public hearings and presenting it out to the voters. So with that, I'll let Mindy talk about the process the supporters have gone through and where they are today.
Well, Mr. Belmont, I wasn't ready for that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can do it if you'd like.
Basically, I'm one of the... Good morning. My name is Mindy Baxter. I'm one of the chief petitioners on the petition, along with Jim Chambers and Marilyn Manning. Marilyn's in the meeting room today. And we were just requesting, today we're just requesting an order for the commissioners, as Mr. Belmont said, initiating the process of the formation of the recreation district. And as he said, we also need, as part of the order, adopting the permanent rate levy, because that's necessary for commissioners to do when there is a permanent rate levy being requested. So, and the petition that we presented goes right down the line of Mr. Belmont's order, proposed order that he prepared.
If I might just add a couple things. So there is in your materials in here that the group has put together an economic feasibility statement. So they explain the reasoning behind.
They have their decimal in the right spot.
They have their decimal in the correct spot. It is 77 cents per thousand. But they also have a 10-year projected budget there for what they would utilize that money for. So that, and that's information that will be provided to the public and provided to, obviously, electors if this thing goes forward. They also submitted a couple of lists. One was a group of volunteers called Keep Our Pool Open. That's the volunteers who've actually been working on this, and that was 49 people. And then another list that they call Keep Our Pool Open Supporters, which had 214 names on it. And I don't think those names, I think they're actually two separate lists. I don't think there's any overlap.
I believe they are.
I think that's two separate lists. So that's an indication of the community desire to get something out to the voters to do that. This process, if you decide to initiate it, would involve two hearings. The first would be held on
January
25th, and then a second hearing on February 15th, in which you would actually allow, we would do some posting and notification out there. Hopefully there'd be some articles. I'm looking at Steve, and he's going to write an article on this in the news media, in which people could come forward and talk about, you know, their reasons for supporting or not supporting the formation of the district.
And Mr. Belmont, just a question related to that, if I could, that again, the timing of this is driven by the deadlines to put this on the May ballot.
On the May ballot, to get something out in front of the voters in May. And also, one of the things they would do...
Well, go ahead.
They would discuss not only the question of formation, but then the permanent rate levy. Is that, you know, what is the dollar amount being proposed here? There could be any input that's related to that. And then third, and most importantly under the statute, is you talk about the boundaries of the district. And let's talk about that for a minute. What's being proposed here is, and the name of this district would be the Greater Toledo Pool Recreation District, is to utilize the existing boundaries of the city of Toledo and incorporate generally the area that's within the Toledo Rural Fire Protection District. That was the area that was chosen. We have prepared a map, and I don't think I've given this to you guys yet.
Thank you.
Through the Lincoln County Surveyor's Office, we've been assisting the petitioners in coming up with the boundaries. As you may recall in our previous experience with dealing with districts, one of the most difficult issues you have is getting whatever proposed district, the boundaries, the description of the boundaries, through the Department of Revenue in a timely fashion so you can actually move forward. And what we did was worked off of, again, the concept of the city of Toledo with the additional area of the fire district. But what we propose is to square off some of the properties, and I'll explain that in a minute. It's much easier to read and get approved a description that goes to either section lines, quarter section lines, things that don't have to follow specific property boundaries, but instead are more aligned with things that are recognized generally. And so we've squared off some of the properties here. My understanding from the surveyor's office is we did not add any additional electors in here, but we did square off some properties so they could meet those general requirements there. And this is the boundaries that are being proposed. And that's one of the issues you'll have to decide going forward, is that the appropriate boundary, and we can get input on that going forward in the future. The second thing is that if you initiate the process, it requires a resolution by the city of Toledo approving of this order in order for the city to be included. The city has not yet made their decision, but has scheduled this matter for consideration and action on there, and help me guys make sure I got
January 4th.
Meeting and would actually adopt a resolution on that meeting if that's the desire of the city council to do so. So this is a little unusual. We don't normally start this process until we have that resolution in hand if we want to include the city. But I've crafted this in such a way that the process would be, if you move this forward, that if the city on January 4th approves of being included in the proposed district and passes the necessary resolution, we'll adopt a supplemental order to this order here that incorporates that resolution. If, however, the city, for whatever reason, decides not to do that, votes against being included, then this process will stop, because in discussions with the petitioners, if the city's not included, that you can't do this for just the unincorporated areas being proposed here. So basically, we would enter another supplemental order that would terminate this process at that point. So it really is, you know, the city's kind of the driver here, obviously. They need to want to go along with this as to be included in the district. So we've covered that particular matter in the proposed order. So that's kind of the gist of what's out here, and it's now for you to decide whether or not to move this forward.
Questions, discussion from the board?
Well, I guess point of clarification. Ordinarily, if the city initiated the process, the city would hold the public hearings, and we would just, in effect, be the conduit to take that issue placed on the ballot. But since we're initiating the process, we'll hold the public.
And the reason why we're initiating the process is that the area, the proposed district, is beyond the city.
Okay. Right.
The city could
initiate
it for the city itself, but the boundaries here are beyond the city.
So, related to that, Mr. Belmont, again, though the subject matter is totally different, procedurally, would you say that this is very much analogous to what we did with the creation of the Greater Siletz Law Enforcement District?
Yes.
Yeah. Where we held the hearings,
yes.
Although it was the folks from the city who kind of initiated the project, got the ball rolling, came to us, asked us for the opportunity to put this before the voters.
Yeah.
So,
but ultimately, the city will need to want to go along with this for this to move forward. If the city does not want to do that, then it won't move forward.
Well, I'll say, you know, I don't know how you gentlemen feel, but based on the material I've seen, you know, that certainly this group has done their due diligence to craft a thorough proposal, and ultimately, because it would be up to the voters to decide whether they want to choose to support this financially, that I certainly am in favor of moving forward to get the ball rolling on this process. And if you agree, I'd entertain a motion to initiate formation of this district.
Okay, before I initiate the motion, since I am a resident of the proposed district, I want to state for the record that my motion to initiate the formation of the district is not either an endorsement or an opposition. It's simply saying that I am in favor of creating the district. With that, I initiate the formation of the Greater Toledo Pool Recreation District and adopting a permanent rate levy.
Second.
And before you take a vote on this, make sure the record reflects that the draft order will be changed to reflect that 77 cents per $1,000 of assessed price. Okay,
we have a motion and a second to initiate the formation of the Greater Toledo Pool Recreation District and adopting a permanent rate levy at the rate of 77 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? It is approved. Thank you.
Be back on January 25th for the hearing on this matter.
We'll see you then. Thanks. All righty. We move on to reports, and we have a presentation from Rich Waller, Samaritan Health Services, Community Health Promotion Coordinated Approach to Child Health Program.
Boy, this has been a day with a wide variety of issues.
Yeah, it really shows the variety of things we deal with. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, my name is Rich Waller. I'm with Samaritan Health Services. I'm the Community Health Improvement Program Coordinator for Lincoln County. And I wanted to talk to you about an initiative that we've been involved with for the last several years, give you an idea of what has happened over the course of the past few years and what we're looking to do going forward. This is more informational, but of course, the support from the county is always appreciated as we look to expand in different areas. So you should have received a packet that has the slide handouts, and I'll just go through those, and I'll try not to talk too quickly because I wanted to cover a lot of ground, and then leave some time for questions at the end.
Okay.
So if you've not heard about what CATCH is, it basically is an initiative that is a childhood obesity prevention program. And I've had the privilege of working with this and other stakeholders in the county for the past 3 years. We implemented the program 4 years ago. So I'll give you an overview of that. CATCH is defined, or it's an acronym that stands for the Coordinated Approach to Child Health. And its main goal is to guide kids on how to be healthy for a lifetime. It's an evidence-based program to shape the child's environment, and that's the key issue here when we look at public health. It's shaping the environment through health promotion, encouraging and reinforcing healthy choices, and as a result, change their behavior as it relates to food consumption and physical activity. I'll give you a brief history. It started in the late 1980s as a research project based out of the University of Texas, and the CATCH trial completed was in 1987, was the largest school-based health promotion study ever funded in the United States through the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. The evidence of the main trial indicated that CATCH indeed decreased student fat consumption and increased physical activity among the children and adolescents. So then, since then, over the last 25 years, CATCH has been teaching kids how to be healthy for a lifetime and is starting to turn the tide in childhood obesity. The core elements of CATCH include physical activity programming, nutrition and other health-related education, and healthier food choices. And this is geared towards preschool to middle school age children. CATCH is now in 10,000 schools, Oregon, all 50 United States, in Canada, and the U.S. Department of Defense.
So if I may interrupt.
Please.
Clarify the difference between nutritional education and healthier food choices. I mean, aren't they kind of the same?
Right. So the program, and I'll cover a little bit that later, but it offers a nutrition curriculum for the educators or the after-school providers. So then they're getting a set curriculum that discusses what a healthy food choice is. So they're getting that difference between, a sugary beverage or a non-sugary beverage, and why is that important.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Please ask questions. So here's a few of what has been shown to be the result of the CATCH program. The ones I like to highlight always are increased activity, less screen time, and improvement in standardized test scores. The idea is to shape the environment, like I mentioned earlier. We're taking a very serious topic and making it fun for the kids. So there are four main areas that it works in: classroom, PE, after school, and family. There's a large variety of different places that this could be implemented in, and it's the coordination of all those that really gets the effectiveness of the program. And so, for example, go slow, woe is a common language that all of these different departments or areas that can coordinate, they can use the common language to speak to a child. And go slow, woe is a tool that allows, that describes how to make those food choices. And define it. Go would be anything that is whole grain, unprocessed, low in sugar or fat. Slow is something that is slightly processed, a little bit of added sugar or fat. And woe describes food that's the highest fat and sugar.
It's a slice of birthday cake there, right?
Right, that's a slice of birthday cake. Or for what I like to, a really easy one for the kids to understand is if you take a whole apple, that's a go food, you can eat that every day. You take a sweetened applesauce, you're not going to eat that every day, but you could have that occasionally. And then an apple pie is something only on a very rare basis. So instead of, you remember my plate or the food pyramid, it just makes it something that's a lot more palatable, mm-hmm. Not to be punny.
Good example.
So CATCH, as the program, here's a picture of some of the some materials that are used, either in the PE or in the classroom. But it also provides training, and that's one of the strengths of the program. It has a diverse range of training, all the way from beginning to booster to online courses. So then, catching on, I want to talk a little bit about what we did with the grant. And I give a little bit broader background of where the grant, what originated it. Back in 2009, there was the Coastal Cascades Community Wellness Network that was formed here as a part of the region with Linbit and Lincoln counties. And it was made up of a diverse range of county health, health services, school districts, oral health, and education. And the purpose for convening this group was to provide executive-level oversight, decision-making, and coordination of initiatives and efforts like this. And at the same time, they formulated a childhood obesity partnership in each of Lynn and Lincoln counties that would give more of that local-level oversight and direct feedback for different programs that were implemented. And they set out and applied for a grant, which I'll talk about in just a minute, but it was an implemented catch, and that was a result of a $450,000 grant from a government grant from the Health Resources and Services Administration. So how we catched on, and if you're around any of the kids, catched can be a word if you're around a preschooler. But I want to show a little bit of what we did with the grant. We implemented physical activity, and the goal was to get 150 minutes of physical activity per week for students, which is no small feat if you're talking to a school district. And 40% of that spent in moderate to vigorous physical activity. The second thing was nutrition education, and that was at one 20-minute lesson per week was what we were strived for. Third, tasting tables based on a pick of the month. And this was a pick of the month that is seasonally as local fruit or vegetable as possible to bridge what we call the experience gap. Some of the kids, you know, had never tasted a kiwi, for example, and just to show them what that fruit can be like. And then oftentimes sites would build a whole month's theme based off of whatever that pick of the month was. And then lastly, the grant included community events. And we called them family fun nights. We pulled together the families or draw the families in, show them the different things that their students were getting around physical activity and nutrition education. So then where the grant went, I've got a couple of maps to show you. This is Lynn County. And then here's Lincoln County. Over the course of the three-year grant period, we implemented in 29 sites. 15 of those were schools, 9 were after schools, and 5 of them were early learning centers. Catch in our area has gone a long way to help reverse the tide of childhood obesity, so I wanted to show you some of the evaluation numbers that we had. In year one, let me get the slide going here. In year one, and these direct encounters are unique individuals, even though a child might have been exposed to catch over the course of a full school year. We had 2,438, year two, almost 5,000, and by year three, we'd reached almost 9,000 students. That is regional-wide. I don't have the numbers particular for Lincoln County.
The region would be?
East Lynn. And forgive me, this is the grant provided that we implement into rural counties. So this would be East Lynn, so Sweet Home, Lebanon area mostly, and all of Lincoln County qualified. We also did an evaluation study called SOFIT. That's the System for Observing Fitness Instruction Time. And we found that there was a statistically increased amount of time that the kids participated in walking or vigorous activity and a decrease in standing time. So the PE instruction was using their time to make it a better quality time. After the evaluation, we saw we made an impact. Some of the success stories, for example, here in Lincoln County at Neighbors for Kids, the students were excited to have catch time. They'd announce it as catch time, so the kids knew what it was, and they'd be very jazzed for it. Kids Club, it was an early learning center over in Lebanon. The kids were actually telling their parents that they needed healthier snacks. And then down in Yahats, the cook down for Yahats, she changed her menu based on the catch curriculum of what she was seeing for the healthier choices. So a lot of success going into it. Then looking forward, we have applied for a new cycle of HRSA funding, and should have the results for that in late April, early May. And again, we're going to focus on rural areas. Expand into rural Benton County, but this would also include all of Lincoln County. We're also going to, as part of that, focus on low income as a social determinant of health. So when we look at the schools, we look at the free and reduced lunch rate or other factors like that. And then based on some feedback from the previous cycle, we took some of the feedback from that, and in this expansion are going to implement cooking classes. So we're calling it the CHEF program, Culinary Health Education and Fitness. And we're going to take this approach. We want to expand the CATCH sites, that would be the CATCH curriculum that I talked about, to include middle schools, because when we look at the obesity prevalence, overweight and obesity prevalence, we're seeing higher numbers in the adolescent children as opposed to just the younger children, and also looking at families. So that would lead us to implement culinary education. And when you're doing culinary education, you don't want to put cooking utensils or knives in the hands of the younger children anyway. So aim it towards the adolescent children and then families to have a greater impact. So we're going to partner with Cooking Matters, which is run through the Lincoln County Food Share. And so we've coordinated with them to partner with them, use their expertise in that area, and then add to or expand what they're doing and broaden the offering of the Cooking Matters course. So the goal of this CHEF program is we're going to really be looking, like I said, at the rural families. We want families to be self-sufficient in the kitchen, make healthy food choices, and then use CATCH as a sustainable program for the promotion of health and the attainment and maintenance of healthy weight for Lincoln, rural Benton, and East Lynn County children. Then we're going to look at several different objectives. The first objective, to implement nutrition focused culinary education. I had a broader explanation of that. As I mentioned, having them be self-sufficient in the kitchen, we really want the children to be able to learn how to make their own healthy snacks if they're coming home without their parents being there at that time. Expand CATCH as a sustainable program. Increase this consumption of fruits and vegetables. That'll be something we're going to look to measure. And then finally, establish culinary education as a sustainable component of obesity prevention efforts by building that local capacity for having to deliver a standardized education curriculum. So our plan and hope is that what we've already done with CATCH is taking root, and we want to grow on that.
Commissioner Thompson, you're chomping in the bit.
Well, this is and I applaud you for where you're going. There's got to be some evaluations by area. I mean, you've grouped them all into men in Lincoln County, different, and not every kid is obese in any place.
Right.
So have you got an evaluation of what the obesity rates are between the two areas? And then how are you going to go about evaluating this long run? I always worry that a grant's created along this line and then the grant goes away. We see it all the time. So are we tracking, and how are we tracking, and how are we evaluating long term? If this goes away.
Right. So to answer your first question, we look, since Samaritan Health Services covers about 80% of the population, we can pull our own BMI data and look at that. We had a smaller grant in 2010 to try to measure BMI data, but that didn't work out. So we reverted to using our own clinic-based data that we gather. When we look at the youth and adults, 44% of the youth are overweight or obese. That's both, when you combine both those categories. And then two-thirds of adults are overweight or obese. And obesity is when you're looking, it's a BMI over 35%. And forgive me, I don't know the overweight.
Okay,
that's good. And then as far as sustainability, that is the beauty of the CATCH program, is once you've provided the training, once you've provided the materials, whatever partner is implementing that, those materials have a fairly long shelf life, or it's easy enough to, you can get the smaller grant to replenish some of those materials, and we've already done things like that. And the training lives on, you know, in that, in the building. Like if we look at one particular school building, we train as many of the staff as possible, even though there is, that was one of the challenges, is staff turnover. But if you train as many of them as possible, they can train those predecessors or subsequent staff people, so that the program continues on in that school building.
Okay. The total, you gave some numbers, the total amount of dollars that was generated to this program. And I guess I'd have to look and see the number of kids that were in those programs that you were going to spend money on. Do you remember what that was or how that breaks down to the individuals?
I should have kept that on the slide. I was trying to keep it shorter. What that broke down to per child, that was about $24 per year.
Wow. That's nothing.
Yeah.
For what great benefits are.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, especially when you do look at the evaluation and see that there is increased, in our own study, not just the national studies that CATCH has done, we saw that here.
Impressive.
I like it.
I was going to say, this is right up your wheelhouse.
I believe that matching studies are important. I'd like to see this program to make sure that these communities that really can get behind it so they match with some money.
Yeah. So that's, if we are, you know, of course, when you write a big government grant, you know, you've got a lot of variables. But then once it's implemented, a certain amount of time has gone by because it's, it could almost be a year before we're looking to implement on our rollout strategy. So it'll be making sure that those community partners are still willing and able to participate by the time the funds are rolling out. So that's the kind of support that we could use in the areas, whether the schools or other nonprofits or the community organizations can partner with it.
Well, the payoff certainly won't be immediate, but long term, I mean, this is fits so in with the whole state and national shift in focus, you know, the healthcare system, as more than one person has put it, going from a sick care system to a wellness system that really emphasizes healthy behaviors and preventing all the problems that go with obesity, like heart attack, stroke, diabetes, and a lot of other things that, earlier in life you get good habits in place. You know, we all know what this is all about. And so my applause to you, and appreciate the briefing.
Good program.
Thank you.
Anything else for Rich? Thanks for being here.
Rich, can...
Oh, go ahead.
Things like this, when you do grants, can letters from, like, the Board of Commissioners help in the application? Because I've never been asked to produce a letter in this area. I've produced letters in lots of different areas for grants, but I'm sure that if you're going to make another application, you would get support from this board.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Definitely.
Yeah, letter support goes a long way.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks much. All righty, we're on to commissioner reports.
Legislature.
Yes, it's here.
It's
almost
here.
Almost officially, yeah.
It's moving. One of the Eugene legislators has went down to the University of Oregon, and now they've appointed a new person in there, so be aware that there's things happening. I was over there on the last day for pre-session filing, and there wasn't many people in the building, but... it's going to be a lot of bills in this one, and not much money. So it's going to be an interesting, interesting session.
Yes, indeed. Commissioner Hunt.
Well, I just have a couple of general observations. I'd like to wish everybody a happy winter solstice. Today is the shortest dark hours of the the longest dark hours. The daylight hours will start getting more in...
You know what's going to be cool about this one? It may be sunny all day.
Yeah.
So anyhow, there will be more daylight starting tomorrow. Second of all, as a former school board member, I have to recognize the Walport girls basketball team, who last week broke their 65-game losing streak with a victory. And then last of all, a happy holidays to our citizens, our visitors, and the county staff.
Indeed. Okay, a couple of things I'll mention. Well, I got some pretty thrilling news last week. Didn't have a chance to share it here because I wasn't at our meeting. But, you know, when I came into this job 12 years ago, I never thought that I would have an opportunity to help influence legislation on the national level. But in a small way, I did. It goes back to the spring of 2015 when Tony Molina of our local Vietnam Veterans Chapter asked me to come to a town hall, part of a 250-stop national tour for Vietnam veterans to build support, educate people about the Toxic Exposure Research Act. I think probably everyone's aware of what exposure to Agent Orange did to people who served in Vietnam, the danger of other toxic exposures to our men and women in the military. But what I wasn't aware of until that evening was the fact that there is a growing body of scientific evidence that, sadly, those negative impacts are passed down to veterans' children, grandchildren, and even potentially to those generations following them. So what the Toxic Exposure Research Act was written to do was to commit the federal government to research, outreach, and education on an ongoing basis about this. And I carried a resolution to the National Association of Counties last year, putting this into the NACO platform. I brought it forward again this year. NACO staff, in meeting with members of Congress and their staff on the Hill, say that this helped the bill to pick up several additional sponsors, and now both the House and Senate have passed a more comprehensive veterans health care bill that folded within that bill all provisions of the Toxic Exposure Act. So as soon as it has the president's signature, it will be the law of the land. Just to explain my absence last week and my absence at our next scheduled meeting, January 4th, this is related to my role as president of the Association of Oregon Counties. Last week, Mike MacArthur, AOC's executive director, and I were in Seattle for 3 days for meetings with our counterparts from the states of Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Alaska. And then the first week in January, we'll be in Washington, D.C. at NACO headquarters and on the Hill for briefings and strategy sessions with our counterparts from all 50 states. Let's see. At this point, we open up the floor to constituent input. Hearing none, we don't have an executive session. So as I already mentioned, we will not be meeting next Wednesday, December 28th. However, on Thursday, December 29th at 9:30 in this room, we will be having our swearing-in ceremony for officials who begin new terms right after the first of the year. That includes myself, Sheriff Landers, Surveyor Joe Davidson, and I believe Treasurer Linda Pitzer is, pardon me?
Assessor.
Oh, Assessor Joe Davidson. Sorry about that. And anyway, that will be taking place next Thursday, the 29th, 9:30, next meeting of the Board of Commissioners, Wednesday, January 4th, 2017, right here. Until next year, we're adjourned.